Okay. Completely aside from all the balderdash we have been going over, let's get down to something interesting and provocative. And let's start with a perfect duplicate. If you guys don't understand a perfect duplicate, you're going to wake up someday without a mock-up because somebody made a perfect duplicate of you, and you're going to consider this a big mystery. A perfect duplicate is a duplicate made in the place of, in the time of, with the energy of, surrounded by the space of the original. Which tells you all it is a consideration that there are now two there. That's the funny thing about this universe. If you consider that two things are occupying the same space, made out of the same space, same energy, same time, in the same place, all you have to do is consider that and it'll disappear. And if you could consider that perfectly and not think of the word hippopotamus while you did it, why, Earth and everything else would start going by the boards. Every once in a while, you get somebody who is oriented in the direction, in Dianetics, in the direction of erasure. Erasure was not making things disappear. Erasure was taking the sense or significance out of the mass. And you then, at least, had the mass. And so we could get away with running engrams. But if you start making perfect duplicates out of engrams, you lose the sense, significance, and mass. Now, it's an interesting thing that you don't necessarily need to make a perfect duplicate of the significance to make the thing disappear. That simply turns up and blows. You don't have to know what the significance of something is in order to make a perfect duplicate of it. Many people hang up on that fact. It's totally a mechanical thing. Now, this perfect duplicate led to discovery of, led to a great deal of advancement in theory. It became very obvious what an ultimate truth was. The rationale of this you will discover in the creation of human ability and in the Auditor's Handbook, first copy. Very little of it there. It's in the creation of human ability. And this rationale is simply on this basis. A thetan is attempting to make things duplicate him. And if he thinks he's a mass, then he'll try to make things into a mass. And if he thinks of himself as a static, then he'll try to make things into a static. And the technique he's been looking for is the perfect duplication. He could make everything duplicate him if he did this. Now, his search for an ultimate truth is simply this, an ultimate duplicate. And the ultimate duplicate of a thetan would be a static. And that's all there is to it. The great oddity of the perfect duplicate is that it apparently leads to one of the finest processes you ever heard of. An engram turns up, you run the guy back into birth, you say, make a perfect duplicate of it. He does, and he makes a running fire duplicate, you know, so that he's taking each motional moment of birth. You see, and he just makes a running fire duplicate, and bang, birth is gone. So is its energy gone. So is its everything. It's all gone. Nicest thing you ever saw in your life. He gets sick as hell. Taking all his mass away from him. The only reason he's holding on to the engram is the mass. I say the only reason. There is a significance reason. So the perfect duplicate was quite a discovery. And when I fell into that one, I felt I had either gone up a long way or fallen a long way. Now, if you were to make your remote viewpoints over here, set up a remote viewpoint opposite every particle of energy in that wall over there, and then have the remote viewpoint make a perfect duplicate of the particle at the point of its origin, the wall would disappear. It really does disappear. Little chunks of it can be made to disappear like this with somebody. It's very curious. Very curious. If Thetans are trying to make nothing out of something all the time, why, there's their chance. Okay. Now let's take up this word. By the way, the perfect definition. What is a perfect duplicate? It is a duplicate made in the same location with the same energy as the original. Just say, it's made with the same mist as the original. That is the correct answer. It's a perfect duplicate. There's not a thing wrong with it, except that everything then disappears. This word dynamic is something you better not have omitted. Dynamic was chosen to represent an energetic urge or thrust. And the word dynamic itself was an urge, a thrust, a motion toward survival. And for our purposes, we could really call it an energetic effort to survive. Get that? Dynamic has little more than consideration connected with it. It's not just a consideration, you see. Although basically everything is a consideration. A dynamic is actually an energetic urge in a certain direction. Working things with stuff and so forth in order to get someplace in the direction of survival. And you know the dynamics. Self, sex, group, man, life, mass, spirits, and infinity. Proper answer for the eighth is infinity, not the supreme being. So you can write it supreme being if you wanted to, but don't lose track of it yourself. It doesn't mean supreme being. We don't know if there is one. Unless it's you and me. And him over there. And all of us together got into a disagreement and decided we better agree on something, so we did, and we got a universe. Although there's some curiosa in this line, which is fabulous. There's apparently something which takes all the responsibility there is for making men, and something that takes all the responsibility there is for making women. We call these things the spirit of man, spirit of woman. There's also the spirit of dogs, the spirit of trees, the spirit of grass, the spirit of cows, and so on. If we start granting beingness to this particular spirit, we get ourselves into some interesting situations. You go and start fooling around with an ant who is crawling along. He's crawling along the ground. He's minding his own business. He's not bothering you. He's not processing anybody or throwing around any N theta. He isn't publishing dianotes or abery. He's not doing anything, you understand. I mean, he's minding his own business. Nothing he could be killed for. And we're exterior, I see, and we just push him a little bit. Push him off course. You come back on the course again. Push him off course. You come back on the course again. And we really shove him off course. And make him, if we do it about one more time, he'll start to run in circles. He'll, you know, get dizzy, upset. His course and direction is very much disturbed. And then, about this time, you will feel there's something very angry somewhere. You'll just have that feeling that there's something upset. Now, it is not the Thetan running the ant. If we consider that the ant has a Thetan who is interiorized or in his vicinity and so on. It's something much bigger and much more powerful. And at this moment, you have contacted the spirit of at least that breed of ants. And you keep on fooling with this ant. And the spirit just gets madder and madder and madder and madder and then skips it. Nothing happens. You talk about the amount of threat which is levied, however. It's terrific. And I have discovered this and have learned not to worry about it. Every time I have disturbed any particular type of life form, for instance, I've made some experiments on jackrabbits. Tried to find out what jackrabbits were thinking about. Boy, are they aberrated. And a jackrabbit sees a coyote over here in back of a bush one day, And thereafter, every bush of that type has a coyote behind it. And, of course, the jackrabbit can't investigate this because he hasn't the strength to enforce his investigation. So he has to consider, then, that every bush of that type has a coyote behind it. He goes along one day, and he sees a wolf, and the wolf is sitting behind a rock. And the jackrabbit notices this and escapes. And then he has to consider that every rock of that color has a wolf behind it. And do you know that they're so daffy that if it was the size of the rock has nothing to do with it thereafter. A great big rock has a wolf behind it, or a little rock has a wolf behind it, a little tiny pebble, if it's all the same color, each one has a wolf behind it. And he has to walk in the most superstitious courses you ever ran into. And he is so superstitious. He believes that the moon, when it's half tipped over in a certain particular direction and so forth, means he's going to get et before the night is out. He also dances by the moon, and he has tribal rites and so on. But he's nuts. Nuts. You talk about identification. Man, a jackrabbit sure got it. When he gets scared about something, even though to thee or me it would be a very light lock indeed, it is a permanent trauma with a jackrabbit to be handed down through all remaining generations of jackrabbits. Oh, it's fabulous. Coyotes are 1-1. But in very definitely 1-1. And wolves are only one. Even when they run in a pack, they're an only one sort of a nature. Each one of these things has its own definite characteristics. But every one of them has in common this factor, that you start fooling around with the anchor points of a jackrabbit and steer him off course and steer him off course and steer him off course, or short out his brain or something of this sort, so he'll go appetite over tin cup at a high run. It's very amazing to a jackrabbit to all of a sudden have all of the neurons controlling his running short. You know, and his commands are not going through. Nothing is continuing in any direction. He'll go appetite over tin cup. But you do something like that, and something gets awful, man. Something way off there someplace, you know. And it gets madder and madder and madder and madder and gives it up. Now, conversely, I took a guy one time that had just eaten some poisoned fish. And knowing this weird fact, I then started to process the spirit of this particular type of fish, have this guy granted beingness. And it got madder and madder, and he got sicker and sicker, and all of a sudden he was perfectly well. Get the idea? There's evidently something which makes a whole lot of GEs of one kind, and possibly a something for every kind of these GEs. And this thing does demand propitiation, and if you were good and weak-minded, you'd go ahead and propitiate. The right course is to make the jackrabbit keep on tumbling, because it won't do anything to him. But it could enforce its wrath upon somebody who would eat one of its mock-ups by having the mock-up be very poisonous. It has very definite laws by which it does this. Curiosa. Just curiosa. I've had, by the way, we have several homosexuals and lesbians who have been very well fixed up by granting beingness to the spirit of man and the spirit of woman. A girl, for instance, who is definitely on the boy side of the register, straightened out her case simply by having her grant beingness to the spirit of woman. Grant beingness to the spirit of woman. All sorts of locks and things fly off, but the fact of the matter is the body reverts to a feminine characteristic. So maybe it isn't just curiosa, maybe it's worth knowing. We straightened out two of the worst ones you ever wanted to see here just a very short time ago. The auditor got a happy inspiration all of a sudden and said, we'll just grant some beingness to the spirit of woman. Oh, the person just couldn't do this, so we had to grant some beingness on a gradient scale. It was, grant beingness was in this wise, permit it to exist. What of a woman's paraphernalia would you permit to continue in existence? Finally, a park bench that a woman had, which an old bum was asleep on at the moment, but which a woman had sat on 2 or 3 years ago. Get way afield. Got us started in that direction, then worked it right on up to where the person could grant beingness to the spirit of woman, and all of a sudden, a physiological change took place, which was quite marked. No wonder rabbits get superstitious. I get superstitious myself when I start looking over some of this stuff. The very little phenomena like that lying around, there's storm god phenomena. There's the god of storms over in India that the boys go over and talk to every once in a while. There's the god of the typhoon who lives down off the coast of Africa. The typhoons that sweep on up into the Caribbean are generated down there. And he doesn't know why he does this. There isn't any reason, but it's a good game. And there are other thetans of this magnitude around who sooner or later will be inside somebody's head. All right. Here we have effort. Effort has the same definition it has always had in physics, which is force with direction, a physical effort in the messed universe. Force with direction. Force does not have direction. When you call it effort, it does have direction. You see that? All right. Some things dropping from somewhere at random and going off in various directions could still be a force. But when we give those a direction, and when we say the force is applied in a certain direction, we use the word effort. Now, there's effort processing, which has been long gone, and so on. But effort processing was a fantastic thing in that it showed that the body was a composite of efforts and counter-efforts. And you could see an engram in its formation making up for some future form. So that this whole principle of making a facsimile would be the principle of an effort. And when an individual has an effort to resist something or keep something from going away, he makes some honeys. That's one thing you really should know about an effort. They just make some lulus. You know that if this individual's got some pressure on his nose that he's objecting to, and you started to process it with communication processing, the next thing you know, it would be a little bit deeper into the nose, and then it'd be a little bit deeper, and then it'd probably hit his mouth, and then it'd probably be back about the level of his ear, at which moment he'd be feeling apathetic. Got the idea? In other words, he's resisting this incoming effort. It's his resistance, his continued resistance toward an imagined effort, which is long since gone, which is holding that force there. And there is apathy on this channel. There's also grief. There's also any other emotion. Now, you should know this because you will see a preclear go into various emotional tones and drop and rise on communication processing. And communication processing is a good process. Effort processing is a poor process. If you didn't have anything else, it'd be real good, but it's a real poor process, really. But the liability of effort processing still shows up in communication processing, in that the individual in resisting. Now, by the way, there could be the same thing. You know, he could have been preventing somebody from going away from him, and you start to have communication occur, and communication occur in that area, and communication occur, and this thing starts going away from him and gets further and further, some kind of a mass or a ridge, you see. And all of a sudden, he starts to feel very apathetic. So on. Run it just a little bit longer, and he will let go of it. What happens there is that as it gets further away, his effort to keep it from going away is seen to be failing. And this failure results in the manifestation we call apathy. So incoming or outgoing, any force is liable to wind an individual up in apathy as the interim or midpoint of the communication process. You follow me? It'll be the midpoint. Now, as he goes into effort, you'd better run it just as long the other way. See, I mean, you're just do the same process. But if he goes into apathy, first he'll go into effort and so forth, you'd better run it long enough to let him hit a little apathy or something of the sort, if he's got big ridges or forces moving around, he'll sure go into apathy. And then you'd better run it a little bit further. Well, you know what really happens? It runs out of the effort band into the emotional band. And where the effort finally ceases to be effort and becomes emotion, the emotion is apathy. So he's just starting up tone. You got that? So you'd run it long enough to get him on up tone. He'll come up tone. So you should know that about effort. The thought, emotion, effort. The know, look, emote, effort, think. Symbols, eat, sex, mystery. That band right there is the full band. Thought, emotion, effort was an earlier version of it. And when you start to work out effort in any direction at all, why, you'd move up usually into the emotional band, and this was painful, or it was upsetting to the preclear in some fashion, and so an auditor is likely to quit right about that time. Well, he's just winning. He's just beginning to win. The apathy is above the solid mass which the individual was a moment before, and actually he feels better, although he's apathetic. He couldn't feel at all just before, you see. Of course he feels better. All right. So the earliest band of this, by the way, the earliest one was the emotional band as demonstrated in book one. By the way, have you ever recognized that Science of Survival's chart of human evaluation is an expansion of the chart of survival, which is the first chart in book one? The earliest form of the chart of human evaluation is that book one chart. By the way, in investigation, I decided a long time ago that if I couldn't represent something in a two-dimensional graph, it probably wasn't true or it had some missing factors in it. That's a fascinating regimen that many a philosopher should have watched. If he couldn't express something on a two-dimensional graph, well, he had something missing someplace. It's just sort of an arbitrary thing, but it happens to work out to be true. You'd say, well, heck, you've left space out of it. You should be able to express space on a two-dimensional graph. Now, emotion is a connector between thought and effort, manifestation of beingness, so forth. One handles motion on a direct ratio with his ability to handle emotion. The higher his emotion level, the more control he can exert over motion. The lower his emotion level, the more he succumbs to motion. What is emotion? Emotion is the first solid manifestation of looking. One runs from looking into emotion. Emotion is the first solid manifestation of this. I'm not going to talk to you all this hour about these axioms. I have something else to talk to you about. Energy is postulated particles in space. An engram, oh please know what an engram is. An engram is its most rudimentary definition, which would be quite correct, was a moment of pain and unconsciousness. And we'd have to go on and say, contained in a facsimile form. You wouldn't have to contain all perceptics to be an engram. You could have a half-erased engram, and it'd still be sitting there as an engram. You'll still find them. You'll still run into them. Exteriorization is the act of moving the thetan outside of the body. Facsimile is a recording in energy of an incident or part of an incident in the physical universe, that should be. It's a theta recording in the physical universe, but it's really made out of energy. I mean, it has mass. It has mass, it has position. There's an interesting anatomy of facsimiles, by the way. Facsimiles are double. There's the facsimile that happened then, and the facsimile made by remembering the facsimile then, and a person's facsimiles, which he's got close up to him, are the second facsimile. See, the original facsimile is lying back at the place where it happened. He keeps his facsimiles located in locations so that if he ever approaches that location again, the facsimile will re-stimulate him and scare him so that he won't have to think about things.
Jackrabbits.
All right. The genetic entity is what we call a GE. We're just talking about the spirit of man, the spirit of woman. Black Hackton, you're in Arizona now, so I'll tell you how the GE came into being. Black Hackton built it. After he built the sky and the earth, why, Black Hackton made birds and fish and animals, and there was nobody to appreciate them, so he created man. And he made him out of clay and so forth. And that's who did it, Black Hackton. That's the Apache legend of the creation of man. So you want to know that. That's his proper name. I asked a young Apache the other day if he'd run into Black Hackton lately, and he didn't know who I was talking about. Isn't that curious? I mean, his tribal lore is probably better known today to white men than to Apaches. But Black Hackton was quite a boy. Quite a boy. Sort of looked to me like an invader from space mock-up myself. I kind of thought this was probably what it was. Because no Thetan covered completely with blackness would do much mocking up. But anyway, that's who made the world, Black Hackton. And he made all these GEs. The GE actually is an evolved piece of machinery. Many life forms of one kind or another get trapped, and they undergo mutual sort of agreement, and their planning is all based on two postulates. Do you know what those postulates are? Yeah, you can just take a GE to pieces with these two postulates. There's three if you really want to take them to pieces. The first one is convince. An effort to convince somebody. Convince. And when he can't convince him by thought, he drops into emotion. When he can't convince him by emotion, he drops into effort. And when he can't convince him by effort, why, he thinks about it. And then probably talks about it. The plaintive sort of thing, what they did to me. As you say occasionally here from preclears. Then he'll drop into eating it, you know, to solace himself about the whole thing. He goes into an inversion. He starts to eat. And if he can't eat well, he'll go into sex. Demonstration of that later fact, by the way, is actually demonstrable. You can take a rat, family of rats, and starve them, and they'll begin to breed like man. Although there's less food for the future, they will breed faster. And if you feed them well, why, they will not breed. So that the cattle here in the fed areas in Arizona and in the West have recently dropped in their birth rate to an alarming degree, and stockmen are very, very upset about this. They don't know what to do about it. Well, we could tell them. All they'd have to do is take a certain part of their breeding stock and just cut hell out of their rations. And they'd get cattle. Well, just take certain breeding stock. Then you'd have the stock that you're feeding to market, and take breeding stock, and don't feed that breeding stock. Yeah. Don't feed them well at all, and you'll get lots of young calves. Oh, you still want that second postulate. Well, the first one is convinced, and the next one is constancy. Just the idea of constancy, of loyalty, of constancy, of sticking with it, sticking to it, on and on. You know, you can practically kill somebody just by running, I must be constant, or match terminal inconstancy, the idea, or any one of these things. It just tears the GE right to pieces. Well, I was going to talk to you about this a little bit later. Must acknowledge. If you were to deny him acknowledgement or communication, that would be the end of that. Now, the genetic entity got there evidently by trying to convince people and showing them what had happened in massed form when they couldn't show them in with ideas. And they keep holding up this mass, these masses and so forth. Anybody who's holding up masses has been inhibited from convincing somebody with ideas. So if he can't convince people with ideas, he starts convincing people with masses. If you want to know how birth gets into restimulation, well, this is a GE underway, a manufacturer. Little boy comes up to his mama and tells him he remembers birth. And mama says, oh, no, nonsense. He'll show it to her. Get the idea? And he'll actually wear it from there on, waiting for her to say, yes, Johnny, you really do remember birth. What's that?
The guy that couldn't convince somebody that his idea worked, Bill
Clinton. Oh, yes. Yeah, the Bill convention. Of course, he goes on the lower harmonic of that and merely invents and doesn't even tell, or he may just start talking, and then after a while he won't even talk to anybody about his invention. Masses come about invariably through a failure to convince. And when they start failing to convince people, they go down in masses. A very, very important factor in Scientology. You try to tell people about engrams, you try to tell them about aberration, and you eventually get to the point where you have to wear it because they won't listen to you. The grand tour is, of course, just one of the R1 processes. Be here, be there. Having to do with this particular galaxy. Havingness is defined here as mass occupying the same space as the preclear. That's quite a trick. If it actually occupied the exact same space as the preclear, it would disappear. So it would merely be mass possessed by the preclear or others. That would be a very understanding definition of it. You understand that if you ask a preclear to bring in havingness, it disappears if he brings it all the way in. It'll only remain there if he brings it only partly in. So to have anything, an individual can't possibly finish the action of bringing it in. I, the Thetan, the center of awareness, that part of the total organism that is fundamentally cause. The Thetan has quality, not quantity. A lot of other things you could say about Thetan. Center of awareness is the aware of being aware unit. Invalidation, a statement, action, or inference that makes the preclear appear wrong. Inversion, a switch to the opposite obsessive consideration as from compulsion to inhibition. Now here you have a dichotomy at work. An individual says long enough, I can work, I can work, I can work, I can work. Now, given this factor that he's trying to convince somebody he can work, and the next thing you know, he can't work. Now, it would just be, that's the most elementary definition of an inversion, would be to slip to the other side of the dichotomy. Do you know that an individual could obsessively flow? This depends upon convincing people, obsession, flow, stuck flows for this to happen at all. But an individual goes down the note of sex scale and then inverts. He actually can run the dynamics and invert on the dynamics. Instead of an urge towards survive, he gets an urge towards succumb on each one of the dynamics. That's an immediate inversion of each one of the dynamics. You can take any preclear and see where he is in the process of inverting. Now, there's another type of inversion, which is not inversion, but which is an assumption of the valence. One abandons his own identity and takes on another identity. And this goes hand in glove with inversion. Thetan runs into a trap and becomes the trap. And if you run him as a trap for a little while, he'll all of a sudden say, you know, there's a Thetan in here someplace. And then the damnedest, horriblest apathy will turn on as he suddenly discovers that he's it. Now, there is an inversion of identity. So an inversion means a switch to the opposite side of the dichotomy or object. Kian is the incident that first brings about restimulation of an engram. Oh, brother, we could go into that endlessly. That's a big subject, Keehan. Best covered in Dianetics, Modern Science, and Mental Health. It is an analytical level occurrence which keys in an engram. Proper definition. Life continuum. One individual attempting to carry on the life of another deceased individual or departed individual. Another deceased or departed individual. By means of generating in his own body the infirmities and mannerisms of the deceased or departed individual. It's trying to carry on the life of another who is deceased or departed. And a person doesn't have to be deceased for you to carry on a life continuum for them. It's quite obsessive, by the way. It isn't volitional. A life continuum is not volitional. The individual misses the other person to such a degree that he keeps the other person around by being him. Only he doesn't have a cognizance of this. Why doesn't he have cognizance of this? It's because he's manifesting it in mass. Manifesting it in a mass form by tokens or spaces or desires for masses and so forth. And this is all mass. Life continuum is a mass problem. You got that now? Problem in masses. That is the only time that you would be worried or think twice in a pre-clear about a life continuum be a problem in masses.
Wouldn't a life continuum just be sort of a solid form of relationship?
Well, that's the manifestation that we're interested in here when we say life continuum. He's taken on some of the shape or some of the objects or some of the mannerisms, actions of this other individual. And he's just still got that this other individual here, you see. Very often he have a mock-up of Mama standing out here 2 feet from him. Yes?
It doesn't have to be
you. No, you can run a life continuum on a locomotive. All right. Now, anything which goes into mass form is out of thought form, isn't it? Huh? It's out of thought form. First thing you should know about masses is a mass is a thought so solid that one is not thinking about it. Got that? It's a memory. A mass is a solid memory. But one doesn't think about a solid memory, but when it starts to come apart, one starts to think. You got the idea? It's just starting to come up scale. Of course, it just goes up the mystery on up toward no, you see. And it'll come up to think, and he'll figure before he really hits the more solid portion of it. By the way, your pre-clear starts figure. You watch out. He's got a mass. He's going to have a mass in just a moment. He's giving birth. Just a little bit upscale from there. Line charge is a prolonged spell of uncontrolled laughter, crying, which may be continued for several hours. You certainly know what line charges are. A lock, an apparently minor incident, which assumes an unreasonable importance due to its containing some similarity to and restimulating an earlier engram or engram chain. You can have a chain of engrams. The fellow can be PDH'd by a dentist or something several ways, several times, and then eventually this gets keyed in, and then you can have sitting on top of that a number of locks. Well, a lock is just a repetition of a key in. You know all about that. Matter is group particles of energy located in a relatively stable relationship to each other. MEST, the initial letters of matter, energy, space, and time, meaning the physical universe. Mind is the machines, circuits, facsimiles, memories, and so forth, which are used in the individual's thinking process, plus the thetan. I'm afraid that nothing exists in the absence of life. Life gone isn't anything. You could have a pretty solid life form, but it'd still be alive. A mind has to be alive to be considered a mind. You can't have an electronic brain be a mind, not by our understanding of it. It can be a thinking machine. The mind is not a part of the thetan, it's not necessary for the higher level activities of a thetan. It's perfectly true, there we're talking about mind, but remember, for a mind to be alive or functioning, it's got to have some life in it somewhere. A mock-up is a full perceptic energy picture in three dimensions created by the thetan and having location in space and time. Now that's the ideal definition. A mock-up is something that the thetan puts up and says is there. That's what a mock-up is. Something that thetan puts up and says is there. A motivata is an overt act by another determinism against the preclear. There should be, right under that, motivator hunger. An individual who's done so many overt acts, he's got a nice stuck flow, but he inverts on it, and he begins to crave things being done to him. And if you don't recognize that with your preclears, you're going to have a lot of trouble with some preclears sooner or later. What he would pay you if you just hit him in the jaw. And here you are processing motivators out of him, and he'll just get more and more hungry, more and more hungry, more and more hungry, more and more hungry. This guy's been a beast. And he hasn't any reverse flow to compensate for this. And so you get motivator hunger, and it really should be right there. There's also overt hunger. Individual's been done to and done to and done to until he no longer cares who he shoots. You've got a criminal. See, he'll just do anything completely irresponsibly. Enough has been done to him. Here's an example. Somebody walks up to you and hits you over the head with a club, and while you're down, gouges out one eye and kicks all your teeth in, and so forth. And you're not fond of this at all. So, if he did this with malice aforethought, and it was a felony, and so on, you now feel that you have the right to gun him down, one way or the other. You now have the right to wreck him. Well, that in itself is overt act hunger. This is quite a remarkable thing, this overt act motivator sequence, and motivator hunger and overt act hunger. Generals, of course, who have been taught to go into war and talk to war and talk to war, and all the things that happen to them in the form of red tape and punishments and reprimands and so forth. And boy, they get so damn overt act hungry, they'll send out battalions just to get slaughtered. You know, men pound at them and hammer at them and give them a bad time, and they'll finally turn around and start to butcher everybody in sight. Quite remarkable. You'll see this thing working out in the behavior patterns of life. What it is a flow getting stuck in one direction, and then it gets so stuck that it can't stick any further, and it starts to cave in on the individual. It becomes obsessive. Curious business motivators. Necessity level is the degree of emergency in present time environment. It would be that amount of commotion necessary to extrovert the individual into action in present time. That would be necessity level. That amount of urgency or commotion necessary in the environment to extrovert the individual and put him into motion in present time. 210 miles an hour in a car would bring almost anybody into present time, even a psycho. Lots of people come into present time an extrovert at an emergency level of 60 miles an hour. See, the danger in the environment is getting more and more apparent, more and more apparent. It'll finally extrovert them. It'll take their attention right off their bank. And by the way, this is operational shock. We'll sometimes operate on somebody and have him key out all the way on down the board. When an operation's successful, this has happened. So we wonder why anybody would operate on anybody. We can produce emergency present-time environment shocks much more easily than putting somebody under anesthetic. This would be a silly way to go about it, give him another engram. You probably could make somebody key out. I know I have seen a couple of instances of this. I saw a sailor one time utterly change his personality. Just completely change his personality. He was never the same man afterwards. He's a much better boy. But he had hit a sufficient amount of emergency to extroverting, and he'd continued to be extroverted over such a period of time that his attention had come off of practically everything on which it was fixed in his bank. And he was a happy-go-lucky, cheerful fellow afterwards. And up to that time, he'd been the most grumbling, growly fellow you ever saw. A crew, by the way, has to, it's an old saw, that a naval crew has to go through an action before it starts to work as a ship. In other words, they have to have enough present time, emergency or urgency, to get their attention off themselves and onto the environment. Notable example of this, a medical doctor was reported in Italy, one of the U.S. hospitals in Italy during World War I, to have cured a what they called in that war shell shock, combat fatigue, and later exhaustion in the last war. He cured this fellow simply by walking in and saying, well, we've got to evacuate the hospital. There's no sense in trying to take this fellow along. The fellow's lying there completely paralyzed. And no sense in taking him along. It'd be cruelty to leave him fall into the hands of the enemy. And pulled out his gun, cocked it, and the paralytic jumped up from the bed and says, my God, don't shoot. I'm all right. I'll go. And the action is not that this guy was faking. It was just that his attention was suddenly yanked off of all this beautiful trauma he was holding on to, was extroverted, and of course he could operate after that. You in auditing are simply trying to extrovert a person's attention from these hidden terminals inside the bank. And necessity level will very often play a prominent part in an auditor's repertoire without his knowing anything about it. Or sometimes his knowing something about it without his noticing it. A fellow turns up to be audited because his wife is going to leave him if he doesn't get audited. That's an example of it. Emergency, urgency in the environment turns him around. And he's asking you to extrovert him. Nothingness. This is one of the more interesting words and one of the more interesting discoveries of Scientology, was the definition of nothing. Nothing up to the time of Scientology was considered a nothing of something. And nobody had an absolute nothingness. The mathematician was using then a wild variable in his formulas, and in Scientology we have nothingness, meaning an absence of everything. No time, no space, no energy, no thought. Now, it wouldn't necessarily mean an absence of life, because life is a quality, not a quantity. So nothingness specifically means an absence of quantities and locations. The proper definition for nothingness in Scientology is an absence of quantities and locations. A complete absence of quantities and locations would be an absolute nothingness. Occlusion. I don't think we have to go over that word. I think that you've run into an occluded case. I don't think there's any confusion at all in your minds as to what an occlusion is. Actually, it means a curtain, something cut out from organism, physical manifestation of life, material form organized and controlled by theta. Orientation point. And there we get into a much longer dissertation than I care to go on with you today. Our definitions, as I say, have more rationale behind them than words. Actually, when you really know a definition, you have a certain cognition of a state of existence. And when you recognize that state of existence, you've got the definition. By the way, when you actually recognize that state of existence, you could sure state it on a piece of paper. That's right. It isn't really a matter of stating just the right words called for by the examination. It's a matter of stating that state of existence. And you can state it very economically if you really know it. Just like I always shy away from 18-page, both sides, written letters which come to me, emergency special delivered, personal registered. I know that this letter is not going to have a point. Something just tells me this is going to be the case. It's unsolicited, and you haven't asked anybody for a report. All of a sudden, this terrifically long, cramped missive shows up. You know about what this is going to be about. Anybody knows what he's talking about. Why, generally, everything he's got to say to you would go on a couple of pages rather easily. He would say it. And if he had a report to render on something, it would be in a report form. You know, he'd report to you about something. Or if he were really reporting to you in a letter, he would simply go on and report to you about it. And he'd probably send it to you by some reasonable method of transmission. And furthermore, he wouldn't distrust that it arrives. England every once in a while goes through a convulsion of knowing its communications aren't arriving. Well, they aren't arriving in the no time which they have assigned to them. It takes them 3 or 4 days to get over here and get answered, and 4 or 5 more days to get answered, you know, and back again. And they will take 10 days, then, is their answer span. That's a predictable lag. They don't predict that lag. They think that they ought to get an answer the next morning. So they write another dispatch and another dispatch and another dispatch. And by the time they've written several, they've clarified the situation themselves, so an answer is extraneous. But you answer the first dispatch, and that now creates confusion. So you answer the second dispatch, and that's more confusion, and you get what's happening to this communication line. It's tumbling. So if a person has to go on and on and on actually to define something that is in Scientology, I say anything here is definable. Actually, not just definable, but is describable within the framework of 1,000 words. I mean, it's fully describable within the framework of 1,000 words. It could be described in a skeletal fashion in about 250 words, usually. And it could be defined in a very few words, if you really understood what it was, and you were merely showing somebody you did know what it was. I'm clamping down a bit on these memorized definitions, particularly since in reading this material, I've had to give you time after time a better or more precise definition of the word than is contained in this glossary. This glossary needs badly to be rewritten, and I will get it rewritten off of that tape. Okay,